great. It's sensitive. Okay, well, let's start with a little bit of background information. Could you state your full name, please?
John Gerald Bellevaux.
Okay. Where did you originate?
Where did I originate?
Yeah.
The same place from whence all people originate.
I was thinking of your date and place of birth.
Oh, I see. You don't want to go back that far.
No.
No, I was born in Halifax. Mm-hmm. On December the 27th, 1916.
Okay, so, when did you attend St. Mary's?
I went to St. Mary's in 1937 in the spring of 37, and I had been there in 9, 10, 11, and 2 years of engineering, 5 years. That'll be to 36, to 35, to 34, to 33.
I see. So, did you go to the high school first?
Yeah, I started in grade 9.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the common, you know, the elementary schools in the city to grade 8. And then St. Mary's ran in those days what they call St. Mary's High School. And they had a college, St. Mary's College and St. Mary's High School. And that started at 9. So I went to school with girls up to grade 8. Hmm. And then never crossed their path after that.
Yeah.
Hip, hip, hooray. No. That would be reported to a racism committee. No, but actually from grade 9 on, you know, my years at St. Mary's, then went to Tech, which is now Tons. And in those days, no girls were taking engineering. So, you know, they're all boys.
Mm-hmm.
So I never crossed paths with a girls' class starting with grade 9.
So what was it like going to a school that was an all-male school?
Well, to tell you the truth, it's hard for me to make an objective statement here. All I have is an opinion.
Oh, yeah.
And to tell you the truth, there are pluses and minuses. I think there are a hell of a lot less distractions to the boys if there are no girls in the class, mm-hmm. You know, for obvious reasons. So the boys have more of a tendency to knuckle down and pay attention to what they're there for. And it seems to me if you had a class like half boys and half girls, you always get some guys that want to goof off in front of the girls. And in other words, their minds aren't 100% on their studies. Now, I may be wrong, but it seems to me, you know, that's the way it would work.
What were the academic courses and things that you took when you were there?
Starting grade 9?
Yeah.
Well, we used to write, if I recall, we used to write 12 subjects for exams. We used to write 2 a day. And, you had math and English and French and Latin and history. And with chemistry and physics. You don't think I could reel off the 12 now, but I remember at exam time, I tell you, I was a mentally lazy student. I'm not bragging, but I never really had too much trouble learning, which is kind of a bad thing for people sometimes, because you have a tendency to coast. If you know your abilities, I used to always know I could do it the night before. So I used to leave things go to the night before, and then I'd have to work like a dog And when you work on 12 subjects like a dog, you know, on 12 exams, boy, you're like a worn-out tire by the time the exams are over. But I know there were 12 subjects, and the exams, you know, it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
But one of the subjects we took, I could never understand why we took it, you know, was Latin. I always had the feeling it was a dead language, and what in the hell were we learning a dead language for when it seemed to me there were a lot of other things we should be doing than a dead language?
Yeah.
Now, the philosophy in the language was, you know, was to, it's like going to the gym for exercise for your mind, and of course Latin is the basis of a lot of languages like French and Spanish and Italian, and there is some merit to it, but at the time I couldn't see any of this merit at all.
Yeah.
But now that it's done, I can see the value of it, because I can speak French and speak English, and I can think in either language. I switch, I never know which one I'm in. And I find that with, you know, my knowledge of English and French and the Latin we had to take, that if I'm listening to shortwave and listen to Portuguese or Italian or Spanish, it's surprising how much you can make out from your mind, you know,
mm-hmm.
handling these three. So I guess there was some merit in the Latin after all.
Yeah.
But they still teach it. For example, at the grammar school today, they teach it.
Yeah.
And I think it's mandatory at the grammar school. And in the junior high, you know, they have Latin, but it's an elective subject, so it's still being taught.
Well, what was the workload like? What were the expectations?
Well, the workload was heavy. The workload was heavy. We used to call it homework in those days, a plain old word, homework. When I say to my grandson, "Do you have any homework?" he says, "What are you talking about, homework?" You know, they call it something else. But it used to take you a couple of hours every night to do it, you know. And at the time, it seemed to be an awful chore. But what it did do, it imposed on you some discipline. You had to manage your time. And it was always being like in a hidden army, you know, the things you had to do. So I guess it was better doing that than going outside and getting into trouble half the time.
Yeah.
But the workload was heavy enough. Another thing they had at St. Mary's, they were great on sports. And the old building was up where St. Vincent's guest house is there now, and then where St. Pat's High School is, that was the football field of the university. And then next to the St. Mary's property, going along Quimple Road, they had the St. Joseph's Orphanage. And the fence that's separated St. Joseph's Orphanage from St. Mary's College, they had two handball courts there outside. And the Irish Christian Brothers were the teaching staff then. And they were great on handball, and boy, they were really good at it. I don't know if you ever seen handball played. Ever seen it played?
Mm, not lying.
Did you ever see a squash court? Well, it looks like a squash court, but instead of using the racket and the round ball, you hit the ball with your hand. And that ball was an Indian rubber ball and hard. And when you'd hit that, well, sometimes if you play two or three games, you'd go in class and you couldn't write the rest of the afternoon. Your hand would be just going this way. And then your hand would get about that thick. It would just swell right up. And after you played, it used to hurt for about the first 10 minutes. And then after that, your hand would get numb, and you could swat that ball and never feel a thing. And the brothers used to love to play, and we used to play, you know, with them. And that was always, you know, a big drawing card. That every time you see, think of a handball court, you think of the Irish Christian Brothers. But the Christian Brothers, you know, it was a private school. And the tuition fees for the year was $60. And they had the academic year was broken up into three parts, the three terms. And the scholastic fee was $20 a term. Mm-hmm. And the actually all education, like it, when I went to Tech, the fee for a full year at Tech was $75. There were two terms, it was $35 a term. So my whole engineering career or studying for 5 years, not counting books, totaled $210. Like there were 3 years at St. Mary's, $60 a year, which was $180. And at Tech, I got a full scholarship the first year, you know, which was no great shakes because they had lots of scholarships. So that was $75 I didn't have to pay. And in the second year, I got a half a year scholarship. It was $70 a year. So I only had to pay half a term. So my 2 years at Tech cost $35. So the whole 5 years, you know, came to $215. You know, when you hear that, you know, mentioned today with cool terms, it you know, starts to sound kind of silly.
Yeah, I would say. Oh, my goodness.
But it was a private school, and the brothers were strict disciplinarians. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't take any fooling. And the attitude was, if you didn't like it, just scat, just go. Because someone else can always take your place. So there was no point in any parent complaining about the treatment their kids were getting, because the stock reply was, if you don't like your boy being here, just take him out. So the discipline they used to give the fellas, you know, was really good for them. And they, you know, they were strict, but they were fair. And they were well liked. Because when they left and the Archbishop brought in the Jesuits, there almost became an internal revolution amongst the alumni, because, you know, we didn't know the Jesuits then. And the Christian Brothers had been here for, you know, eons, and they were deep-rooted in the souls of all the graduates, and it was a heck of an upheaval, I can tell you. But the Jesuits turned out to be good fellows, too. But the old alumni still, you know, look back fondly on me, on the Christian Brothers.
What was the discipline like specifically? What were the rules and
I seen a fellow get an uppercut to the jaw that sent him flying down the aisle.
What had he done?
He passed a note to somebody. I guess he had written something he shouldn't have written. And the brother asked him for the note, and he wouldn't give it to him. And it led into a tug of war between the two, and then finally, crack. But no, they didn't take any fooling. The type of stuff they would do, for example, they had one or two lay teachers. They had an economics teacher, a fellow named Jackson. He taught economics. And then they had a French teacher. It was Alan Frecker. His father, Frecker's brother. And Alan Frecker went to Newfoundland and finally got to be the Minister of Education there in the Smallwood government years ago. But he was a meek fellow and a nice fellow and a quiet fellow. So there was always the problem that we would take advantage if a guy was meek. So one day, the French class, it was supposed to commence at 10 o'clock. So we heard him coming, you know, down the corridor. So a couple of fellows went up, and the way to get in the classroom, if you were standing in the corridor, you had to turn the doorknob and then pull the door towards you. You didn't push the door in the class, you pulled it out. So a couple of fair-sized fellows in the class went up and they grabbed the doorknob and then they held it tight. So Frecker came and tried to pull it, and he expected the door to come and he pulled on it, and of course the door didn't come, but he flew back and banged in the wall on the other side of the corridor, half killed himself because, you know, he had given a tug and nothing happened, but he's the only guy that moved. So he came back and he got a little mad at the time, which was strange for him. So he was trying to pull on the door, and these two fellows could easily hold it, so they just held it. And the door might open a half an inch, and then, you know, then bang, close, and open up three quarters of an inch, and bang, close. And this used to shake the walls in the corridor. But what these two fellows didn't realize was the Irish brother disciplinarian happened to be teaching a class across the corridor. And boy, he was a holy terror. And he heard this banging and he came out. And apparently he told Mr. Frecker just to stand to one side. The guy was very short, lightweight, but boy, what a temper. And he had a bushy head of gray hair that was parted on the side. And if you looked at him, the first thing you noticed was this crop of, you know, gray-white hair. So apparently he said, let me at that doorknob. So he starts pulling. So then again, the door, you know, going this way. And apparently at one time it opened up far enough that the fellow had to see through. And they saw this crop of white hair. Well, Mr. Man, did they ever let go of that doorknob quick? So the little fellow comes in. And he didn't say anything. All he said was, come with me. So they went downstairs, followed by what we thought were the two heralds. So about 15 minutes later, they came back, and the French class had started. So they came in, and they went each to his desk, and they were standing there. So Frecker said, well, okay, fellas, sit down, sit down. And they each said, no, Mr. Frecker, if you wouldn't mind, we'd rather stand. And they stood up the whole rest of the morning. But they were taken downstairs, like in the guest room, and they had to lean over on a big plush chair, bottoms up. And the disciplinarian had this great big thick strap, and I guess he whacked the rear ends. Honest to Pete, they couldn't sit down until about 3 o'clock that afternoon. And that's the kind, you know, if you did that in school today, the fellow would probably end up in the penitentiary for 2 years.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of stuff they would do. So most of the fellows were pretty well behaved.
Yeah.
One day we had a gale. It was in the fall. And there used to be a lot of gales in Nova Scotia in the month of August. They used to call them, actually it was in September, but they used to call them August gales. It was like the tail end of the gale season, and school used to start at the beginning of September, and you'd still get an odd one. So one day we had a bad one, and the ball field beside the university was lined with trees along Windsor Street and along Quimper Road. Well, one tree lost a huge branch. It was about that big around, a tremendous thing, and it snapped right off and fell on the ball field. So at recess that day, we all went over to see this thing, and one of the fellows says, the next class we had to go to was a French class by a Brother Murphy, who was an affable fellow, real nice. Someone said, let's get this up in the classroom, fool brother. So we all looked at this branch. It seemed to be the size of a big house. And they said, well, are you crazy? You know, get this in the class. What are you talking about? And the classroom was up, you know, the second floor. Well, he said, I think we can do it if we try. So there were 55 of us. So the 55 of us got at different places, and we started yanking on this thing, hauled it across the field of the school, got to the front of the college building. We opened up the big double doors at the front. We knew the brothers were having their Irish coffee in their restroom, in their quarters. So we were trying to pull this thing through the door. And it's like trying to pull an umbrella through a knothole. You know, not the wrong way, but the right way. So we finally got ourselves working like a team. And we'd all, you know, grunt together in the whole 55. And then the tree would inch about an inch ahead each time. Well, it surprised us all. We finally got it in the big main hall. And, of course, when it got in there, it just go right out again. And all the leaves on the branches and everything. Then we had to go around a stairway that went this way and this way. And we were hoping the brothers wouldn't hear. Well, to make a long story short with this tremendous work, he said, one of the toughest jobs I've ever tackled. We got the tree up on the second floor in the corridor. Then when we got to the classroom, it was just an ordinary sized door. Well, Mr. Mann, you talk about a job getting that tree through that door. And we finally did it. And when it got in, when the big branches would get in the classroom, they'd pop right out again. And when we got the tree in, it went from one corner of the room to the diagonally opposite other corner, and the whole room was full of tree. All branches and leaves. You couldn't see, 3 feet ahead of you. And then the bell rang for the class to start. So we all had to go like monkeys climbing through the trees to get to our seats, which wasn't easy to do. And we finally, there were 50 in the class. I think it was 50 or 55. And we all sat down. Took us a while to get there. And then when we had shut the door, and in comes brother, and he opens the door, which wasn't easy. Well, you should have seen the look on that brother's face when he saw that. It's easy to understand you'd be astounded, because the last thing you expect to find is a classroom full of, one big tree. And then he got mad as hell. And we had to go down and see the janitor, who was a Mr. Shute. And he had like 8 carpenter saws down there in the boiler room. And we had to get the 8 carpenter saws. And we had to saw the tree up. They had a fireplace in their restroom downstairs, their sitting room. And we had to saw the tree up in little logs, fireplace length. So it took us from then until lunchtime, sawing up this tree, and we had to open up the windows and throw the wood outside and then stack it. But it was something, you'd believe, that's something that couldn't be done, but it's amazing what you can do when you put your soul in it.
Okay, let's talk about your fellow students for a little while. What were the family backgrounds of the students that were going there?
Well, generally speaking, they were, I'd say, middle class and some, upper middle class. But see, in those days, those were the days of the Depression. And it was a worldwide depression, and it was extremely severe. People are talking about hard times now, but this is nothing compared to what it was then. It was awful. So $20 a term doesn't sound like much money, but believe me, that was a lot of money in those days. So a lot of fellows that would have liked to have gone to St. Mary's, their parents just couldn't afford it. It was just impossible. I know one fellow whose father was out of work for 4 years. And, there was no welfare in those days. They didn't have all the the safety nets you hear about today. And so the ones that went were people who were lucky enough to be working and, you know, could afford it.
Mm-hmm. So were they all Roman Catholic students at that time?
Not all. One friend of mine was a Jewish chap. Mm-hmm. And no, there were some Protestants there, and the majority of them were Catholic. But they would take anybody, you know, who would come along, as long as they behave themselves.
What was the what type of role did religion play in school?
Well, they had religion played a it was one of the main subjects, and it was a subject you had to pass. And then they taught it all the way through. It's a subject I like very much, because in one particular year we had like almost like comparative religion studies. Mm-hmm. You studied Buddhism and all the different others, and it was really fascinating. It was very good. But I could, every class would start with a prayer. And I always remember the Jewish fellow, we'd be standing and he would just stay seated. And, you know, that was just common behavior. It's a, mm-hmm. nothing to it. But the... as a matter of fact, I don't know how many of those fellows are living today. Mm-hmm. Too many. My grandson asked me the other day, he said, you know, where are all your friends, you know? And I said, John, I said, all my friends are dead. Which is true. They're all gone. Mm-hmm. Every one. But this Jewish chap that I was talking about was in our class. He's still living. And he's living in Spring Garden Terrace. As a matter of fact, he got kicked out of school. He was a good ball player. He had a brother who was a good ball player and a fair hockey player. And his brother lost an eye. He got hit with a puck right in the eye, and he lost the eyeball. So his parents wouldn't let him play hockey anymore. But this chap that's still living, he got a call one time to go to the Boston White Sox for a tryout for the, you know, the big team. And he didn't ask brother's permission, you know, to skip classes. He just went. Of course, he was missing for a couple of days. So when he came back, he was no longer a student at St. Mary's.
I see.
Yeah.
What were some of the other recreational activities that you had?
Well, we had a rink. They used to call it the Roram. Did you ever hear them that at St. Mary's, that term? Roram. It was... naturally, it wasn't artificial ice, and it wasn't a standard size. It was a little smaller. So playing hockey, instead of a six-man team, you had to have a five-man team. Mm-hmm. You only had two forwards, two defense, and a goalie. And you could only play if it was cold enough. But it was used, you know, whenever it was usable, all the time. But one of the troubles was in one part of the rink, just about at center ice, on one side, the soil used to go up in what they call a frost boil every year. So when you got in the spring where it used to thaw and then get cold and thaw and get cold, the ice would start going up, you know, up and up. So when you're playing hockey, you almost had a mound, you know, the right wing had to cope with. And passing the puck wasn't easy with this mound. And then when it got near the end, when it started to melt, the ice would melt there first, and it was all full of mud underneath. So if you're playing right wing, when you got to this spot, you had to run through it on your skates, almost like splashing in the mud to get to the other side. Believe me, it was hockey with a bit of a handicap. But still, it was, you know, very popular and really used, you know. And then on the playing field, well, of course, St. Mary's had the regular, they had the high school hockey team. And they used to play against, it used to be the Academy. There was no QEH in those days. St. Pat's and the Academy and St. Mary's High School was the league. And then they had the college team. And when St. Mary's entered the league consisted of, I think it was Acadia and Dalhousie and St. Effects. I think that was all. And St. Mary's entered as the fourth team. And all the other teams refer to them as the Windsor Street Kids. They just call them the little Windsor Street Kids because their enrollment wasn't very high. So they entered the league. And then they never lost a game for 12 years. Never lost a game for 12 years. And as a matter of fact, the guy that... In my first job, I worked in one place for 44 years, and my deputy played on one of these collegiate teams. And he says, I had the honor of playing on the team that lost its first game after 12 years.
Oh, is that an honor?
Yeah, he said, I had the honor of being one of those players. Oh, they were disappointed because they almost looked, you know, unbeatable. But they were...
They were good. That was going to... Well, isn't that annoying? I thought I was going to put my hand right on it. Of, you know, one of those big those hockey teams. It's, no, I used to save all my yearbooks. And my mother, when she was cleaning out the attic, turfed them all out in the garbage. God, I could have cried. I had postcards. In those days, every ship used to have postcards of the ship. They were colored. And I had a postcard of every ship, every passenger boat that sailed the oceans of the world. Everyone. We used to have to write to different companies. It took me years. A friend of mine and I had this as a hobby, and I had a stack that high. And every ocean-going passenger vessel I had. Today, it'd be worth a fortune.
Tough.
My mother in the garbage. So my yearbooks kind of disappeared.
Let me see.
One of the things they used to have at St. Mary's that everybody used to like, they had two things. They used to have what they call a boys' night. I'll tell you about boys' night in a minute. One of the subjects we had to learn there was Irish history. You know why. But it was really fascinating. And for several years, you know, they taught it Irish history, and they wanted to know it just as deeply as the British English history. And I'm very glad we took it because, you know, I really enjoyed the subject. And I tell you, it gave me a hell of a better handle on what's going on in Northern Ireland today, because you won't get it from the British side. And that's, you know, one subject that was really attributable to the, you know, the Christian brothers. But they used to have another thing we used to get from the Irish Christian brothers from Ireland was a collegiate publication called Our Boys. I always remember it was 5 cents. And it used to come
least to me, was every Friday. And if you bought it, you were allowed to read it in class for half an hour. So I always bought one. But it was fun because you'd kind of, you know, get the dope on what was going on in their schools over there. But they also had once a year an hour boys' night. And every class would put on a skit. You know, the school had an auditorium and a little stage in front. And for boys' night, the only people who attended were the boys. No parent, nobody else, just we. And every class put on a skit. And that was always fun. And then they would always put on, for the parents, they would always put on a gymnastic display. And that was done for the parents. Mm-hmm. I've never forgotten the gymnastic display because a buddy of mine and myself, we were the smallest guys in the class and the lightest guys in the class. When I went to Tech to get my last years of engineering, I only weighed 135 pounds. My waist was slimmer than a girl's waist. I could take my thumbs and put them in my back like that and bring my fingers within 2.5 inches from one another. You know, now that's some size waist. So my buddy and I used to always, there were two big pyramids we'd end up with as a finale. And of course, we always had to be the top guys. And the top guys, believe me, was high. And you had to climb up the, you know, the legs and the backs of the guy, get on top. He'd be standing on the shoulders, and then he'd be holding your feet. And your head was almost bumping the ceiling. And you'd look down, you'd see all the parents. You'd figure, my God, if I ever went. And one time, the pyramid I was on got wobbly, and it started going this way. It started going this way, you know. And then finally, it started going this way. And I had to yell at them, you know, to let go of my feet. Because we were over about 30 degrees and he was still hanging on. And I was screaming for him to let go, and finally he did, and then I jumped backwards. But I've never forgotten the gym night.
What type of skits did you put on boys and bad boys?
Well, each class had to dream up a skit. Now, in one class, they had sort of a variety thing. And I'll tell you, if there's one song I just can't stand, is Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. Did you ever hear that song?
Yes, yes.
Well, there's one guy in our class, he wasn't a bad singer, but I didn't like his voice. And he sang this thing, and I think he sang every verse that the, you know, the writer put in. And believe me, my wife always used to ask me why I would get so hostile when I used to hear Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. But the skit that we had in our class was a shadow skit. We hung a big white sheet across the stage, and then we had a powerful light at the back of the stage, cast a shadow. So we had one fellow who was a doctor, and there was a table supposed to be an operating table. Then one fellow comes in as a patient, and he was complaining, and you talk loud, you know, so they'd hear it. And then all you see is the shadow, and then and you'd hear the voice. So the fellow came in, you know, limping badly. Doctor tells him to get up on the table. Asked him what was wrong, and the fellow told him, you know, he didn't know, but boy, something was wrong. So the doctor examines his leg, and oh, he said, I see the trouble. He says, really? He says, there's no way at all of curing this. He says, I'm going to have to amputate your leg at the knee. So the fellow puts up a protest. Well, he said, it's either that or you're going to die. Well, he says, okay. So just beside his leg, it would be like a 2x4. So the guy would take the saw, and all you'd see is the guy's leg and the saw, and you'd hear this going, and you'd see the sawdust going down like bone. And all of a sudden, the 2x4 would go kabang on the floor. And then the guy would walk out like on one leg and a pair of crutches. But it looked quite realistic when you know, actually saw this happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing we used to do there, looking back on it, I don't know how in the hell we ever did it. We used to time ourselves. I was one of the fastest ones, but there were three of us in the whole school. Everybody would try it. We used to be able to go from the third floor down to the main floor in something like 22 seconds. And what you'd do, you'd go to the wall on the third floor, face the stairs, and kick yourself off the wall so you go fast as a devil. And then when you got about 6 feet from the first stair, you jump right up in the air. And as you're in the air, you turn around so that when you came down and landed, you'd land on about the third stair, and you'd land with your toe just on the tip of the stair. And at first, we used to put one hand on the banister. But after that, we could do it without even touching the banister. And your foot would slip from stair to stair. And all you'd hear was, and you'd go down each set of stairs, just sounded like a machine gun. And you weren't touching anything, but you were just skiing on the edge of the treads. Either when I think of that, you know, I wonder, how crazy can you get? But it was just as easy as walking. But it's funny, little things like that always bring to mind your good old days at St. Mary's.
Yeah.
Another thing, the students at St. Mary's always had to enter the school by a side door on the north side of the building. And a little further from that, the tennis courts used to be located there too. I forgot to mention the tennis courts. They had, I think it was three courts, and they were well used. Well, in the wintertime, when you'd come to class, all the senior and the bigger fellows used to stand at one side of this area beside the side door, and they'd make snowballs. And as the younger guy, like the grade 9s and grade 10s would come, they'd all start belting you with these hard snowballs. And it was just like running the gauntlet. You'd take your windbreaker and have to put it over your head, and you'd have to you'd run like the devil and try to get through that side door before you got half killed. And every day it was running this gauntlet. And you'd keep doing this until finally you got in about grade 11 and started belting the new young guys. But it was all, you know, part of fun.
Yeah.
One day there was a fellow up in the dormitory. Most of the students, though, these were day students. Watch the clock. Were day students, and they had boarders, but they could only take so many. And they used to be up in, like, in the dormer section of the building. One day there was a ball game going on, and some of the students were standing at one of these dormer windows, and they were big windows, and one particular window they had worked on it, so they had taken out the lower and upper pane. So it just happened to be, at the moment, one large opening. So a couple of fellas were standing there with their foot on the windowsill, which was just almost floor level, watching the game. And I don't know what happened, but one guy got so excited he fell out the window. And down he goes, three stories. And everybody thought, good grief, you know, here's a couple of broken legs or broken back. And what had happened was, the previous day the gardener had prepared the garden to put in some spring flowers. And he dug it up and sifted it off. And this fellow, when he came down, luckily he landed feet first, and he went right into this soft earth right up to his knees. Right to his knees. And didn't have a mark on him. Right into a freshly dug flower bed.
What luck.
Oh, boy. Another fellow came from a little village in Cape Breton. He was a boarder, and he was new to the city. He wasn't familiar with things here. So this Brother Murphy, I told you about the classroom full of trees, I asked him one evening to go to the, he said, in front of the university on the street there's a mailbox. He would mail this parcel for me. So the fellow said, sure. So he goes out, and brother said, boy, it's some lucky. For some reason, I just happened to be looking out the window when he got, you know, to the street. And he says he goes and puts, the next day was garbage day, he goes to this garbage can, lifts up the lid and puts the package in it, puts it in and comes back to the university. So he says, I had to tell him the difference between a parcel post box and the garbage cans. Now, he said, if I hadn't have been looking, he said it would have just gone in the garbage and I would have wondered what happened to my parcel. What else do you want to know?
Well, that's about everything that I wanted to cover.
Okay.
Is that all that stands out in your mind?
Yeah, I think so. There's a lot of... We had one president there, Brother Cornelia. I can never remember if it's Cornelius or Cornelia. He was a nice fellow, but he had to be strict. I don't think he was as strict as he was letting on, but everybody, you know, really paid attention to this fellow. Well, we had one fellow in the classroom. This was the engineering drafting first year. He was Tubby Hinch. He was a fair size, let me tell you. And the columns in the university was an old building where these cast iron columns about that round. You've probably never seen one, but buildings in those days were built with cast iron columns. And the thing had been painted and varnished many times and was right slippery. So one day I thought, I don't know what I can do it. So I shinnied up this thing, which wasn't easy because it was so slippery. The ceilings were high, about 14 feet high. I shinnied up to the top and touched the ceiling and then slid down. So a couple of the guys said, boy, we never thought you could do that. That's pretty slippery. So Tubby Hinch says, oh, nothing like that. I can do that. So we all said, Tubby, don't be stupid. You can't go up that. Sure, he said, I can. So he goes and starts off. Well, believe me, it was an almighty struggle to get these pounds off the floor. And after he had gone up about 3 feet, his face was blood red and his veins were sticking out. But he was a very determined guy. And he's going and going and going, and my God, he got up to the top. And when he got there, he was just beat. And just when he got up to the top and touched the ceiling, the door to the drafting room opened and Brother Cornelius came in and walked over to this post, which was only about 5 feet away, and then leaned against the post with this about 250-pound guy up on the slippery pole, leaned on the post and started to talk to us. One thing he never did, he never would come in and talk, you know, but for some reason today he got in a talkative mood and we thought he would never, never, never leave. And we were trying to give him yes and no's for answers so he, you know, would get on his way. Well, under circumstances like that, it just seems like a second is like a year. And then finally he went, and when he closed